Wrap it up. Rippity, 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 rap. Rapperoony. The San Francisco treat.
The following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 234, recorded on Friday night, January 5th, 2018. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
Coming up, Guillermo del Toro says he saw a real UFO, and we'll have his reaction to it. Mystery of alien megastructure star has been cracked. Plus, a sighting along with our picks and warnings. Before all that, though, our question.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
Since it's a new year, this is our first episode of 2018, what are your predictions regarding extraterrestrial life, like discoveries and or first contact for the new year, Brad?
I want to say I think that we're going to get a little bit closer to answering the question, definitively, was there life on Mars?
I was thinking the same thing.
I think this is the year for it. In fact, I believe it's this year that another craft is going to land on Mars. InSight, a $425 million lander mission with a drill and seismometer, is determined to determine the interior structure of Mars. Two flyby CubeSats called Marco will be launched
Polo.
With InSight. That will be launched this year in May, the summer.
Okay, so it's going up this year.
Yeah, which means it's not going to get there until 2020, it looks like.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we still have Curiosity still doing its thing.
Chugging away.
And I think that we are going to see a little bit more technology with like long distance craft.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Being able to fly maybe faster or speeding up some of our timetables to get to Mars and things like that.
Yeah. I've seen more and more stories about that technology where they push the craft with a beam of some kind. I forget how that works.
Mm-hmm.
This year, also, Elon Musk will test his Falcon Heavy, I believe, in a couple weeks. He's putting up a Tesla into orbit, which is pretty cool. But my actual predictions, one of them is an increase in UFO activity. More people reporting sightings in 2018.
Mm.
And I think we'll hear more about that government program that we talked about on the last episode. I think more information will come out from that. More, there'll be leaks from whatever cases they worked on when the organization was still running. So those are my two predictions for 2018. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
In the news,
it is yet another follow-up on something that we've been talking about off and on, and something that's kind of been on some people's minds, talking about that supposed alien megastructure. Astronomers had made an observation, and it looked like it might have been something like an alien megastructure surrounding a star.
Sort of like a Dyson sphere.
Kind of like a Dyson sphere. What is a Dyson sphere? For those of you who don't know, it is a structure that would be put around a star to harvest as much energy as possible from the star. There's been a lot of back and forth. You know, was it comets? Was it something else? Here we go. This is from National Geographic. Scientists have concluded that the deeply erratic twinkling of the most perplexing star in the sky is not the work of aliens, but dust.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This star that that they've been tracking is in the constellation Cygnus, the Swan. It's been baffling astronomers with its random dips in brightness, larger and brighter than the sun, and nicknamed Tabby's star. The stellar weirdo, I like that, that's very scientific, stepped into the spotlight when scientists proposed that alien-built megastructures could be sporadically causing it to darken as they crossed its face. But new observations suggest the real culprit is dust.
I'm not saying it's dust, but it's dust.
But it's dust. Perhaps the remains of a planet or a moon the star recently destroyed. So even though plain old dust is considerably less exciting than crafty aliens, they make it sound like they nip off to Michael's and, you know, knit something to put around the star. They have a coupon. It's all right. There's still some cosmic sleuthing to be done. Jason Wright from Pennsylvania State University says, "I love a really good mystery, and I especially love it when all our best ideas just go right out the window. It means we get to have more fun." He sounds like a frat dude more than an astronomer.
He sounds like George Costanza. At least the way that you said it.
Right out the window, Jerry. The fact that it turned out to be boring old dust, as some would put it, is what everyone expected. But I'm gratified that we still have a nice, healthy mystery to crunch on. Now, like I said, this mystery started in 2011 when the Kepler craft, which is mapping out extrasolar planets, discovered this when it discovered more than 2,300 planets during 4 years of its primary observations. But the dips that Kepler recorded from Tabby's star didn't correspond to anything remotely like a planet's shadowy fingerprint. Instead, they appeared to be more intense and almost entirely random. Once alerted to the star, formally called... No, we're not doing that. Astronomers. All right. KIC 846-2852. 8675309.
I love that one.
Astronomers couldn't come up with a reasonable explanation for what they saw. Motivated by the burgeoning mystery...
I believe that's burgeoning.
Burgeoning?
Yes.
I don't know. I like burgeoning. It sounds like baloney.
It sounds like bemoaning. Isn't it bemoaning? Is that
bemoaning?
Yeah, bemoaning. Yeah.
Okay. Motivated by the burgeoning mystery, teams of scientists combed through data spanning more than a century, looking for patterns that could reveal the source of the star's enigmatic dimming. Data suggested that independently of the individual blips, the star is consistently getting dimmer. Now scientists are not sure about that either. Astronomers even pointed one of the planet's most sensitive radio telescopes at the star, hoping to hear murmurs of civilization intelligent enough to craft structures so large they sometimes block a substantial portion of the star's light. They heard nothing.
Actually, I think they probably heard crickets, actual crickets chirping.
So, the astronomer, whom the star is named after, Tabitha, Tabby's star, launched a Kickstarter campaign that pulled in more than $100,000 and harnessed the power of a variety of ground-based instruments. Her goal? To catch the star in the act of dimming and get a better look at what might be blocking its light in real time. Now, the observations began in March of 2016 and continued through December of 2017, just last month. And in May of last year, Tabitha got lucky. Boy, that took a turn.
Wow.
Her star began to dim. Almost immediately, nearly a dozen telescopes on Earth swiveled to stare at it. Can you just imagine that? Sorry. The scientists furiously collecting data in nearly every wavelength of light. After months and four distinct dips named Elsie, Celeste, Scarabray, and Encore, the star was no longer visible to telescopes in the Northern Hemisphere. Tabitha says it was kind of surreal in a way to watch this happen in real time and to be able to do what we have been saying we wanted to do for years, observe it in a dip. Now, Tabitha and more than 200 collaborators have analyzed data for the last 22 months and report in the Astrophysical Journal of Letters that dust is responsible for the dip and that alien megastructures definitely are not. So there you go. A mystery is solved, and now they know. It's not the work of aliens.
You said that this was discovered for the first time in 2011, right?
Yes, they first, that's when, I wanted to say Galileo. It's not Galileo, Kepler. That's when Kepler had first got the data from the 2,300 extrasolar planets, and they were sifting through the data, and they discovered Tabby's star.
Okay, so it wasn't made known until a couple of years after that, right?
About 3 years after that.
Okay, because I was like, 2011, we've been doing the podcast since 2011. I would remember if this story was around for that long. I didn't think it was.
No, 3 or 4 years, actually, because they had to sift through all that data of 2,300 planets.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So, yeah, there you go. Mystery solved. A number of people are disappointed, but you know what? That's okay.
Yeah. This has been quite the tease, because it first came out that, oh, it could be a alien megastructure, and then they're like, no, they backed off. And then they're, but it still could. And then they came back, no, probably not. So this is the definitive, no, it's not an alien megastructure.
Yep.
I'm disappointed. Maybe we'll have another discovery like this, and it will be finally an alien megastructure.
Well, maybe someday. Maybe this is the year.
Yeah, add that to our predictions. 2018, the year of an actual alien megastructure being discovered.
Boom.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Guillermo del Toro says he saw a real UFO, and what do you think his reaction was?
He thought he could make a movie out of it.
No.
No? What?
His thought was, man, that is horribly designed. Leave it to a director to think something like that.
Seems legit.
He recently spoke to the Hollywood Reporter about some of the strangest and most supernatural experiences of his life. In addition to two encounters with ghosts, he describes how he had a very vivid encounter with a UFO as a young man. Now, this was probably part of the press tour for The Sound of Water. No, not The Sound of Water. What's his latest movie? The Feel of Water, something about the water. The Creature in the Water, that movie?
Scent of a Woman.
No, that's not it. Sorry. Okay. Here's how it went down. He described buying a six-pack, which he insists he did not drink, with a friend, and the pair drove out to look at the stars on the side of an isolated freeway near Guadalajara, Mexico. As they sat alone in the darkness, they saw a light on the horizon moving super fast. After they honked at it and flashed their lights, It went from 1,000 meters away to much closer in less than 1 second. Although Del Toro described it as the scariest moment of his life, the Pan's Labyrinth, Pacific Rim, and Shape of Water director couldn't help but note how visually unimpressed, or no, excuse me, how visually unimpressive and hackneyed?
Hackneyed.
I've never seen that word before or heard that word before.
Oh, boy.
Huh. Unimpressive and hackneyed the spacecraft was. And even as he and his friend were fleeing for their lives. So they're running. They're running away as fast as they can. And he's thinking in his head, man, that was a terrible looking UFO.
He was thinking, man, that was hackneyed.
Yeah. I'm going to grow up and make a movie with a better looking UFO than that. In fact, they won't be UFOs at all. They'll be giant monsters in the ocean fighting giant sea creatures that could be aliens. So I brought it back around to aliens, Brad.
What?
Yeah.
You, sir, are a master.
Thank you. It was so crappy, he continued. It was a flying saucer. So cliched with lights blinking. It's so sad. All right, Trump. I wish I could reveal they're not what you think they are. They are what you think they are. I don't know what that means. It's a bit weird to think that a real UFO could seem derivative compared to the Hollywood versions of that dominate the popular imagination, or that the entertainment industry has created otherworldly conveyances that are weirder and cooler than those allegedly made by real aliens. Still, this was many years ago, and there's no word from Del Toro about the possible stylistic advances in alien technology design in the time since. Okay, so let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Of all the different types of UFOs that we've talked about on this podcast, what kind do you think is the most impressive? A flying disc? A triangle? I know that you've never seen any of these, but from the descriptions that we've read and talked about, what do you think would be the most impressive to see in real life?
Maybe a pyramid? I think just because, I mean, we have the Great Pyramids, it would mm-hmm. just be really kind of mind-blowing to see something like that.
Yeah. I agree. Also, it would almost seem like you were watching an episode of Stargate, right? Because a lot of a lot of the alien stuff from that show was inspired by the Egyptians. I'm going to say the most impressive of all the ones that we've talked about would be the triangular shaped ones, because they always seem like they're just gigantic and dark and move like so quietly. Like all the reports, or a lot of the reports that we've read on this show, have been about people that have just looked up and saw them floating in the sky without even realizing they were there. So I'm going to say triangular is the shape that I think would be the most impressive to see in real life. Hopefully we'll get to see one of the types of shapes someday in real life. That would be awesome.
That would.
Yeah. Maybe add that to our predictions of 2018. One of us is going to see an actual UFO. All right. See, we're doing the whole thing of putting it out there in the universe to make it happen, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the secret.
It's the secret.
If you enjoy this podcast, The Alien Invasion, and would like to get involved and be our partner, you know, do more than just subscribe or listen, you can be a partner with us by going to gncasts.com/support and then click on the Patreon link. We have different levels and they all have rewards. $1, $3, and $5 a month. And we're not talking per episode or per week. This is per month. Almost anybody could afford a dollar a month. And you could even get your name mentioned on the air, get a bonus podcast, or even have a whole message read by one of us jokers. You know, consider it like a commercial. Like, you got something coming up, you got something you want to get some eyeballs on or some eardrums on, become a partner at the $5 level, and that will get you a commercial on all of our shows. So again, go to gncasts.com/support and become our partner. Partner.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It is time for our sightings segment. This is where we talk about an incident or a thing that somebody saw once in the sky, or it could be on the ground, that they thought might possibly be an alien craft of some kind. And this week, it's Brad's turn to bring the sighting to us. So what do you got, Brad?
Well, I'll tell you what I got. I found a new interesting website. It is newfork.org, N-U-F-O-R-C.
What does New Fork stand for?
That's a very good question. It's the National UFO Reporting Center.
Oh, okay. I've heard of these. I've heard of this organization from way back in the day, listening to Coast AM.
There you go. And so I figured I would dip into this resource and see what I could find. And sure enough, if I didn't find something from just before Christmas of 2017, so, you know, just a few weeks ago, this particular sighting happened on December 20th of 2017 at a little after 10 p.m. Now, this was in anybody listening from Kentucky, I apologize. Bera, B-E-R-E-A. It doesn't feel right to say Beria.
Barium?
No, that's... I'm going to go with Bera, Kentucky. This particular craft was actually a light. They couldn't determine a shape, but it was a light in the sky that lasted for 30 minutes and was red and green and hovering over the city.
That's a good long time, 30 minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes is a lot of time. This particular person reports, at 9:14, my boyfriend, mom, and myself observed a singular light in the sky. I went inside for my binoculars and viewed the object. To my surprise, I saw a red and green light. When we first saw the object, it was flying at about the height of what a helicopter would fly at, I guess. And then, after about 30 minutes, we realized it was slowly rising to about the height of what an airplane would fly at. Then we just went back and said,
this has to be one of the most boring sightings I've ever seen or heard.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome.
We saw something in the sky, and then we went back inside.
And we took a nap.
Yeah. Alrighty. Thanks, yeah, Brad.
I'm sorry that wasn't all that exciting. But you know what? Sometimes in the field of science, I mean, you don't get the Indiana Jones moments in the real world.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got a little bit of drudgery to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the thing.
Not so. Everybody can be a rock star.
Absolutely.
We all aren't special.
It's true.
As society would think. Or tell you, you're not special. Okay, this would be a great way to bring in a discussion about people that listen to this podcast. If you've ever seen something in the sky that you couldn't explain, we would love to hear about it. So, there's many ways to get a hold of us. A few of them are, you can email aliens@gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com. You can call our voicemail number. It's 805-1-805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, or head to our website, send us a message through there, or connect with us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'd love to talk about the thing that you experienced, the light in the sky, the craft. I'd love to hear a story about an actual craft, you know, a structure that you saw, real structure.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's get a listener sighting for a change.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Go outside right now. Go, you know, I don't care how cold it is. Well, if it's really cold, make sure that you dress in layers and you cover that exposed skin, because I don't want you to get hurt or die. So get bundled up, depending on what part of the world and the weather that you're having. Go outside to an isolated area. Bring your camera with you, you know, your phone with the camera on it, a notepad possibly, some coffee. You need some coffee to keep you awake, and wait for something to happen. And then if something does happen, let us know about it.
Absolutely.
I can't believe I'm actually telling people to go outside.
There's no shame in that.
The galaxy far, far away feels closer now than ever before, and your guides through this galaxy are ready to help. I'm Zach Hagenbusher, one half of the new Jedi Archives podcast with Ben Schultz. Join us every other Tuesday for our experiences with the Star Wars saga, from the core films that we know and love, well, you know, some of them, to the annals of history and the works that shaped Star Wars into what we know it as today. Just jump in wherever you'd like. Download an episode of the new Jedi Archives today.
Let's do our picks and warnings, shall we?
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
Picks and warnings, picks and warnings, picks and warnings, picks and warnings. Ba la 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 bump. Okay. Picks and warnings. These are entertainment things that we have, you know, read, listened to, made, played, whatever, but they have to relate in some way to aliens and extraterrestrials. And the last time we recorded, you were about to go see Star Wars The Last Jedi.
I did.
And over the time since we recorded last, I went to see it with my wife.
Nice.
And so we're going to do a joint pick this week. So, Brad, how do you want to start this, Star Wars The Last Jedi? Do you want to do spoiler-filled or spoiler-free? We could do the old, you know, if you don't want to be spoiled, turn off the podcast.
I think that's the route we need to go.
Okay, so
I really do.
I'm going to give people plenty of time to turn off the podcast. If you don't want Star Wars The Last Jedi spoiled, if you haven't seen it yet, although you're probably among the minority, because judging by the box office, 3/4 of the world has seen this film already, turn off the podcast in 3, 2, 1. Spoiler time.
Spoiler time.
All right. So give me your initial impressions, your initial reaction to Star Wars The Last Jedi. What'd you think about it?
I enjoyed it. I think it had a lot of good messages. I'm going to say this and I'm going to explain it. A lot of positive things happened with this film in that we got to see that people are human. Heroes are human. They do stupid things. They make mistakes. And that happened a lot in this film. And that was a good thing. It reminded me a bit of Empire Strikes Back, of course, the second of the original trilogy of films, in that, boy, everything got really dark at the end.
Yeah, it did.
with a little bit of a ray of sunshine, as it were, at the tail end. See what I did there?
Yeah,
anyways,
yep.
But, you know, for as much crap as people gave it with, okay, I want to lay out a couple of complaints that people had. One, the jump to hyperspace suicide mission. A lot of people complained about, why don't they just, send a bunch of X-Wing fighters and kamikaze stuff? And it's like, one, heroes really don't do that. Based on the American view of history of that type of warfare, that has a very negative connotation. But two, we also get to see that the resistance has a handful of ships. They have no resources and nowhere to really go, and no way to come up with ships that they could do kamikaze runs, even remote controlled. I have to imagine that each of those ships costs billions of whatever type of currency that they used. It's very expensive. And last time I checked, the resistance wasn't rolling in cash. So no, that's just not going to be like that. Princess Leia and her force powers. Well, it was established in Empire and kind of totally finalized, and we fully understood it in Return of the Jedi. She is of the lineage of Skywalker. She has the abilities, but they didn't take the time to train her. Now people are going to say, well, she was never trained in force powers. How could she do that? There are documented cases of people doing extraordinary feats of, like, you'll read the occasional story of a mother or a father who has a child who is trapped under something impossibly heavy, and an adrenaline rush in that moment where they perceive such danger that they do something so extraordinary that they can't do it normally. But she was in a life-threatening situation, and she did a thing, and it was instinctual. I doubt that they would have her do it again. She's not going to pick up a lightsaber and do crazy stuff, but she was in an extreme situation, and natural abilities that she had untrained came to fruition and helped her.
Also, we don't know what she did in the time between Return of the Jedi and this film. She may have been trained.
It's been decades.
Yeah.
I doubt that she had full training, but I have a feeling that she may have here and there tried a couple of things. If you're hiding from the Empire, you got some free time on your hands while you're hiding. We just don't have those specific details. But yeah. And people say that the whole, going to the planet of the wealthy people was pointless, but no, it really kind of pointed out that there are a small group of the haves who deal in the war and make money from it. And that was really the point of that, is seeing this ultra, and it kind of relates to a lot of the political things that are happening now, and people talk about the 1% or whatever. We have the ultra wealthy folks on this particular planet. We know that this planet people dealt in the selling of armaments and arms and ships and whatnot on this planet, and they made a lot of money, so they had this casino planet. That's not really outside the realm of anything that, it makes sense. Why wouldn't you? I didn't find it wrong in any way to point that out.
I also thought it was cool that they're expanding the universe a little bit, like seeing us more of the Star Wars universe. Cause we don't usually get that in these films. The other people that are around.
Yeah, it kind of made it a little bit more kind of a living and breathing. Not everybody's fighting the war. The universe it goes on, and there are some people that profit from it, and we got to be introduced to them. So, all in all, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great film, and I'm glad I saw it, and I look forward to seeing the next film.
Yeah, I'll freely admit it's not a perfect film, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it probably as much, if not more, than you did. I thought it was... I didn't feel bored at all during the film. Like, I was captured by it, and I don't know if it's the reason, but what made it more enjoyable for us is we watched it on IMAX, and it was my first time ever watching, like, a feature film on an IMAX screen, and it was pretty cool. So that added something to it, but I think even if I would have watched it in a normal theater, I would have enjoyed it just as much. I liked how they expanded on the characters, like we learned a little bit more about each character, and the introduction to a couple of characters, like the, I forget her name. What was her name? The
Rose Canto?
Yeah, Rose, yeah. I thought she was fantastic, and I'm looking forward to her coming back. And I think I know one of the reasons why they introduced more characters is because the next film, there's probably not going to be any of the original film characters besides the androids, maybe, in it. Because Leia, obviously...
Carrie Fisher's no longer with
us. Yeah, she can't film it. Luke is in the Force somewhere. Han Solo's dead. Chewbacca's still around, but he doesn't talk.
Yeah.
So the humans, the original trilogy humans, are no longer with us. So they're trying to, speaking of the universe, maybe expand the universe of characters a little bit more. And I'm really looking forward to that third film and the introduction of the next trilogy, the non-Skywalker trilogy.
Yeah, the focus has been on the Skywalker family and the Skywalker story. So they had to take it somewhere else, and now was the time. So,
and we still don't know who Rey's family is. Like, who was it? Kylo Ren said that you're nothing special.
Your parents were drunkards who, you know, sold you to get money for, you know, booze.
Yeah, and he may have been saying that just to get under her skin.
Yeah. You can't. He doesn't seem like a trustworthy sort.
Yeah.
So, there's definitely more to that story. So.
Yeah, I can see where they're going with this, and they're probably going to end this one the way similar to how Return of the Jedi ended, with him coming back around again. That's the only thing that could happen at the end of the third film.
He's technically a Skywalker.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. I'm super excited. I loved it, and I want to go see it again. Definitely. It was a great Star Wars film, and lots of cool spaceships, lots of cool spaceships, lots of introduction of cute characters. The Porgs are adorable. I love the Porgs and those cool ice wolves. Those were neat, too. So collectively, what's our score going to be on this, Brad? I want to say 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I think 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. 4 flying saucers it is for Star Wars The Last Jedi. All right, so we have a third story this week, and it was kind of last minute, thanks to my wife.
My wife.
For letting us know about this, and it's a sad story. But actor John Paul Stewart has passed away. You may be asking yourself, who is John Paul Stewart? Well, he played Alexander Roshenko, Worf's son, in the episode Reunion. So he is the actor... the first person to play Alexander. He died on New Year's Day at the age of 33. No reason for his death was given. Following his career as a child actor, Stewart played in bands, DJed, and in 2015 opened a vegan restaurant. So again, John Paul Stewart has passed away at the age of 33. Alexander Roshenko. That's a very, very sad story. You know, what's making me sad... I knew it was bound to happen sooner or later, but the people that were in our, not just our personal world, but our encompassing what we're into, actors, singers, artists, as we grew up and became mature and went into adulthood and lived our lives, these people that we have been following are starting to pass away.
Yeah.
Now, he is a special case. He's very young, 33 years old, but there's other actors, like most of the original Trek cast is no longer with us. And now we're getting into secondary Trek shows. People are passing away. So I don't want to say this, but Patrick Stewart will someday pass away. Like, he'll probably be the first actor of that show to pass away.
Quite possibly.
It's bound to happen. It's going to happen eventually. I just don't like it.
Yeah. No, it does kind of suck, but, you know, it comes for us all, unfortunately.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
So that's going to do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you would like to read more about the stories that we covered on this episode, click on the links in the show notes. A few people we'd like to thank. Well, number one, you for listening and subscribing, but also to Monkey Warhol for giving us the intro song called Alien Syndrome. You can find out more about him at monkeywarhol.bandcamp.com. Also to Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. His website is thecaravel.net. thecaravel.net. And finally, to our good friend, Mr. Ben Olson.
Hi, Ben.
For recording our disclaimer audio at the very start of this episode, his website is benolson.com. Brad, final thoughts. What do you got?
I wanted to mention that the next alien type film that that I'm looking forward to is Pacific Rim 2, Pacific Rim 2 technically, but Pacific Rim Uprising with John Boyega.
Nice.
Who we know as Finn.
Yeah.
From the newest Star Wars trilogy.
Is he speaking in his British accent in that film?
He is, because he is going to be Idris Elba's son.
Oh, sweet. Okay. I was wondering about that. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to that one. I'm looking forward to the next Cloverfield film that comes out early this spring as well. I think maybe even February, March. And I'm also catching up on the Marvel movies. I just got done watching Spider-Man Homecoming, and before that, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh, I just watched that again.
So all I have left is Thor. And then, of course, Black Panther comes out, all leading up to Avengers Infinity War.
So, yes.
Yeah. Lots of Marvel stuff this year. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a fantastic couple of weeks. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.